Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I am Summer Brooks, and my guest this week is Daniel Abela, who is the director of the Philip K. Dick Science Fiction Film Festival. Did I get that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Excellent. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the festival is in its third year. It is in the New York City area, running this year from January 15th to 18th. Tell us how this festival got started, Daniel.
Well, you know, a few years back, I came across an article that mentioned, it was written by Ursula Le Guin, and she mentioned that there's this writer called Philip K. Dick, was his own homegrown Borges, Jorge Luis Borges. Now, I've always been a big fan of magical realism, the type of kind of sci-fi that comes out of South America. So when I saw that, I thought, well, maybe I should check this guy out. He's got a very unusual name, and let me see what he's all about. So I started reading, I think, Valis. That was his first book I tackled, and then I ran on another one, and I got hooked, and I really came across a writer who shared a lot of the same philosophical and scientific ideas that I do, and I thought it was something of a very unusual person. Now, I had heard of his name from a lot of the Hollywood films that have been playing since the 80s, but I thought that when I started reading his works, that here, someone who was truly of a strong philosophical bent, and I was hooked, and I've been hooked since then. I figured that in New York City, there's never really been a sci-fi festival per se. I mean, we've got some horror conventions and so forth, the Comic-Cons. So I think there would be a really good time to introduce a sci-fi festival within that, have that specific context of Philip K. Dick, which emphasizes dystopia, paranoia, surveillance society, technology out of control, and so forth. So we've been running it since I did my first one in 2011, which was like a test run, and a lot of people attended it. And then the official festival inaugurated back in 2012. Been doing it since then, and it gets more and more exciting every year.
Are you finding that more and more people are submitting short films and feature films in the vein of Philip K. Dick's view of the world?
Yeah, I think that the people that are submitting films are definitely, a lot of them have a specific theme. Clearly, it's not any kind of sci-fi. It's a very specific kind of sci-fi that we are receiving submissions for. And I think a lot of them are familiar with the writer and have been influenced by his ideas. I think that we're living in an age where people are more, where really, it's almost that we caught up with what he's been talking about. Everything from the surveillance state to technology to the idea of a matrix or a computer-generated simulation and so forth. So I think that we're catching up very quickly with him. People realize that he was a kind of a modern-day prophet.
How specific are the requirements for submissions?
Okay, basically what we're looking for, there are four categories. One, specifically Philip K. Dick, other inspiration, adaptations, stories that are truly follow a very, that are not just your standard sci-fi, but that are, that appeal to specific elements like parallel realities, dystopic worlds, and what it means to be human versus machine. We look very closely at those films to make sure that they have that at least one of those elements are adhered to. I mean, sci-fi is a fairly broad genre, so we're not getting films that are of a fantasy nature. You know, elves and fairies and dragons. We're getting very little of that. We're getting more closer to a futuristic, technology-driven reality that, for good or for bad, is definitely impacting everyone.
How international are your submissions, the actual films being showcased this year?
Well, we're getting films from just about every part of the world. We have some of them come from the U.S., some from Canada, some from France, some from Spain. For instance, Thursday night, with the official opening of the festival, we have a whole slew of films from South America and Spain that promote sci-fi. And sci-fi has never been, as a genre, has never been big in South America, but now it's really catching up, and we're seeing some amazing films. Now, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we're seeing films from U.S., Canada, Europe, Eastern Europe, India, Asia, so from all over the world. Every year there's a little surprise, or a couple of surprises. Let's say a year ago we had some films from Iran, which were amazing. This year we got one from, we got a few from France, and we got a few from South Korea that it's really that have taken us by surprise.
So talk about the filmmakers that you're showcasing in the Q&A sections. Who has really impressed you with their submissions this year?
Okay, I think that what the difference between this year and other years is that we're getting a lot more features, and really good features.
Wow, okay.
Yes, I mean, I think that's really important. I think almost all the features in the Friday night slot are very, they're very well done. I mean, Nightmare Code, for instance, directed by Mark Netter, is a this was featured. His film has been influenced by the writings of Philip K. Dick. It implicitly presupposes a point of view that is from a computerized model of reality. That is, the characters it sort of departed from the traditional narrative. We have like a one scene, and here you're seeing five scenes or four scenes taking place at the same time. It's almost like the whole movie is being told from the point of view of this emerging consciousness that ultimately impacts the characters. I thought that was very unusual. We have a great documentary. We actually have two good ones. The first one is Painting the Way to the Moon. It's the story of Ed Bell Bruno, which is a NASA JPL physicist, who found that there was a way of improving the efficiency of satellites as they come closer to the moon, reducing the payload. And the way he did it is by finding, using kind of very abstract mathematics called chaos math. At that time, NASA basically scoffed at him, but then later he was vindicated when he helped a Japanese satellite find its way back home on very limited fuel. But what's the real kicker is that the actual mathematics he was able to derive by looking at his paintings. So he's also not only is he a physicist, but he's also a painter in a Van Gogh style. And one day he was looking at the trajectory, one of his strokes, and he realized that that's exactly the same kind of stroke he needed, or the satellite needed to go to conserve fuel. So he sort of back engineered that information and came up with the math. So, absolutely fascinating story, and he's exploring the connection between science and art, and I find that's very inspiring. Ed will be hosting a Q&A after the show.
Wow, that sounds absolutely fascinating.
Oh, absolutely, and we also have a recent entry called the Montauk Chronicles, which has to do with an urban legend that in Montauk, New York, dealing with alien visitations and UFO abductions and mind control. And there are about four different people who have come up in the last 10, 15 years who talked about this experience. And the director is going to have these people on board. Montauk is like our own Area 51, and it's called Camp Hero. So the whole urban legend has emerged out of that, and there is some evidence that something happened there, although it may not be alien visitation, but there's some sort of activity took place. So the documentary called The Montauk Chronicles explores that in a very impartial and objective way. What is this legend that has emerged out of the Montauk point? Similar to the Philadelphia experiment. he does it in a way that's objective, and he scrutinizes the facts and finds out, comes up with some sort of interesting conclusion.
Wow. That sounds, just from a curiosity standpoint, how can you not find out more? Because urban legends usually have some basis in something happened, people make up stories to explain it, and they take off from there. And
absolutely. You know, I think that there's always a kernel of truth in that. One thing that I want to mention is that our festival is exploring that boundary, that zone between science and science fiction. You see, we believe that science fiction is the science of the future, you know? And we've done that again and again through different panels and movies we show. For instance, a few years back in 2012, we had Ronald Mallet, who is a tenured professor of physics at UConn University, who's working on a way of sending binary signals, photons, back in time. And this is by locally distorting space-time, creating a kind of a vortex where you can throw light or photons or information and have it go backwards in time. Now, this experiment is still in a theoretical phase, but I found the whole idea absolutely fascinating. And his story, for those who want to, it's absolutely fascinating. It's about a man who basically saw his father die of a heart attack when he was very, very young. And then he plunged into a deep depression. And then shortly afterwards, he, upon reading H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, he found out there was a way, maybe a way of reconnecting to his father. He became obsessed with time and time machine and time travel. And for many years, he ignored it. And then as an adult, he came across this clause in the Einstein's equations that suggested the possibility of localized time travel. And he, since then, he came up with this theoretical formulation of a potential time travel machine. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fascinating. Not only the technology, but the human side. I mean, people think of scientists being these cold analytical machines with no connection to what's going on around them. And very much we find out that there are things that influence them. Ed Bill Bruno, in his documentary, said that before, but he was like a 60s, he grew up in the 60s, he was basically someone who was almost a dropout, had no real interest in physics or mathematics. And then one day by accident, like a lot of people in the 60s, he took mushrooms. And then shortly afterwards, his brain started speeding up at a mile a minute. And he realized that the only thing that could slow him down was hardcore mathematics. You know, and since then he became really focused on space exploration. It's absolutely interesting, you know. This is why I think that when we attempt to explore the connection between scientists, science fiction, their dreams and how their dreams become reality. Mm-hmm. And this is what I feel we're trying to set ourselves apart from other sci-fi festivals, which will show some great films, but they don't really make an attempt to connect the dots. We really are making an argument that the science fiction of today, it will be the science of tomorrow.
Yeah, and a lot of Philip K. Dick's fiction dealt with perception. Perception and reality, right. And a lot of the films that you're talking about here take that and run with it. So that's an awesome way to honor the man's work, the man's, I guess, like you said earlier, philosophy.
You know, we're living in a world where technology is encroaching in how we interact, everything from our cell phones, smartphones, computers, plus augmented reality devices. And I think Philip K. Dick saw more than other scientists how that would impact how we even relate to each other as humans or relate to each other to the machines themselves. So it's not just that the machines are becoming more like humans, it's like we're becoming more like machines. It works both ways. And he explored. I think that for him, the telltale sign of what it means to be a human being is the ability to be empathic with other sentient life forms. And that's why I say do androids dream of an electric sheep? Or in Blade Runner, you see the instances where the machines are actually more human than humans. There's been a sort of a swapping of identities. So It's he really was, I think, of a kind of an unusual person, too. I think that his experience, his visionary experiences, which he referred to this 2-3-1974, where he, shortly after having his tooth pulled out, he felt he was basically plunged into another reality. And he felt he was basically everything that we're witnessing, experiencing right now, this is a simulation, that we really, all of us, are living in first century realm. And a lot of people might think, well, this guy's it's just too much, too many drugs, too many amphetamines, maybe he had a psychotic break. But I tend to think that perhaps, like a lot of writers have also come afterwards, he may have seen the larger realms. He may have plunged into an imaginal field, Jungian archetypes, where he saw the realities, parallel realities. And I find that absolutely fascinating, and also very different from a lot of writers that have come, were his contemporaries. In his case, we've seen someone who had a real visionary experience, kind of, but unlike, let's say, some other people, did not become a cultist, did not to say, okay, I'm going to create my religion. And this, because even after he had that experience, he questioned what the meaning of that experience was. Was this a direct connection to God? Was this a psychotic break? Was he just like connect? And he kept doing that till the end of his life, and which I find very, to his credit, truly inspiring. A lot of people, when they have a visionary experience, they literalize it and assume this is a direct connection with a higher entity. And the, whatever. And then they write books about it and they make fortunes. He didn't do that. That kind of skeptical attitude, the idea to understand that we are living these multiple realities, is what sets him apart from so many other writers. And, you know, before The Matrix, there was Philip K. Dick. He talked about it. In fact, in his 1977 documentary in France, before a group of writers and an audience, he said, we live in a computerized generated reality. He didn't call it The Matrix, but that's what he was referring to. So we're looking at a truly fascinating human being that whose work and thinking extends beyond just science fiction, extends more into the philosophical realm. In fact, his writings, his ruminations after his 2-3-74 experience are a kind of philosophical treatise on the nature of reality. Much more interesting than anything you might find if you were to just take a work in philosophy, which tends to be very dry and uninteresting. This is a lived reality that he experienced, and he talks about it in a novelistic way, so it makes it more attractive to anyone who really wants to explore what philosophy is all about, metaphysics and so forth.
And we have his fiction to thank for continuing to inspire new writers and new filmmakers to come up with their own interpretations, to question the world around them, to question what they're seeing, what they're experiencing, and come to their own conclusions, and then question again and come to a new conclusion.
Well, absolutely. Never stop searching and really start looking and explore, understand that we are all living these cultural and scientific maps of reality, but reality, a direct apprehension of reality, certainly cannot be described to someone else. It has to be lived, but and I think that's what he understood. And a lot of writers have been influenced by his thinking and continue to do so. You know, we try to show films that are more faithful to his actual writing. I mean, Hollywood films, although they've done a great job of spreading his name, they often rely too much on more action-based themes. There are a couple of exceptions. Scanner Darkly is one.
Mm-hmm.
Adjustment Bureau, maybe another one. And then more recently, which is not a Hollywood film, it's an indie film. It's called Radio Free Albemuth, which was a novel written posthumously, published posthumously, based upon his experiences, 2-3-74 experience. And I recommend to any Philip K. Dick person to go out and get it. I think you can watch it now on iTunes, I believe. You can rent it, so...
Yeah, I think it became available on Netflix in September of 2014. Yeah.
I think that's a really good adaptation of the novel. The character tends to be more introspective. There's no real clear cut ending. I mean, there is, but I think there's not like this idea of you're, and a lot of Philip K. Dick's writings, the characters are not these superheroes. They're just normal human beings who have to struggle with these issues. They're not people who are able to just, they're not Superman. And that's, and in this film, the character is not a Superman. He's just someone who has a vision and is trying to come to grips with that experience.
Okay, so tell us where people can check out these films.
Okay, so first place is go to our website. It's called the Philip K. Dick Film Festival.com, and that gives us it will give you a breakdown of every single short and feature that's out there. The film is the first night is going to be Cervantes Institute. Friday night is going to be at Tribeca. Saturday is going to be at Producers Club, and Sunday will be at Tribeca with you in the awards ceremony. I also want to mention there, we also have not, I think there's a very sci-fi genre. It's small but growing. But we also have some supernatural thrillers that have been influenced one degree or another, and we include those in our festival programming, such as 21 Days, which is going to be playing on Friday night. And I believe the director, Kathleen Behan, will be bringing a paranormal investigator, a researcher, and she'll have him for a Q&A afterwards. In addition, Chris Alexander's film, Queen of Blood, like the title, is actually an expressionistic film, closer to something that Andy Warhol or maybe Michael Snow would have directed. Slow-moving, almost like a delirium kind of pitch about basically a woman who is accessing these supernatural powers. This falls close more on the supernatural side, but I do think that in terms of the way it was directed, it's in a very expressionistic style. We also have James Fotopoulos there. Now, James is a well-known underground director. His works have appeared at the Whitney. He's shown his films at Sundance and other festivals. And again, I encourage people to go out to our website and look him up. The film is called There. So, we have we have another film by Christian Carroll, which is an ode to Pandora's Box. Unlike most of our selection, it's a much more hopeful, joyous kind of film. It has kind of work that maybe Terry Gilliam would have made or directed or produced. It's called Lulu. It's called Suicide or Lulu and Me in a World Made for Two. That's a midnight screening on Saturday at the Producers Club. So there is definitely film for just about anyone, from the really underground experimental to a very technologically heavy, dystopic sci-fi. And in our panels and our documentaries, I think there's almost anyone who goes there will walk away feeling they've coming across some really interesting ideas and dialogues.
Okay, well, I'd like to tell our fans and listeners to in the New York City area to go check out this film festival. It runs January 15th through January 18th in various locations, the Cervantes Institute, the Tribeca Cinemas, and the Producers Club. And I just want to make sure I have this right. The international science fiction shorts on Thursday night are actually free admission?
That's correct. Thursday night is free admission, 7 to 9:30. And all those films are gems, each and every one of them. They're shorts, but they're really, really well done, excellent films. Okay. I've personally seen all of them, and I can vouch for that. And, yes, I encourage people to come and meet us and see us and mingle and, find a community of sci-fi, real serious or sci-fi writers, directors, producers. You'll have a ball. The Philip K. Dick Film Festival.com.
Excellent. We'll have links to the website, your Twitter page, your Facebook page, on our website, sliceofscifi.com. And like I said, everybody who is a Philip K. Dick fan or is curious about his work and the work that his work has inspired should really go check out these films. Thank you, Daniel, for your time today.
Thank you, Summer. I really, really appreciate for everything you've done for us. And I hope to see you as well at the festival.
Someday I will get to New York and check these out.
Thank you. Okay, great.
You're very welcome.
Thanks.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
He rolls 20 every time. He laid out plans for man to reach Mars and return safely on a cocktail napkin. The next day, it was approved. He always knows where his towel is. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friend.
That'll do it for Slice of Sci-Fi this week. And I do encourage all of our listeners who are in the New York City area and who can get to the Philip K. Dick Science Fiction Film Festival, check it out. Let us know how it was. I would love to make it to a future event, so I'll just put that on my wish list. As always, you can check out more of our news and reviews over at the website, www.sliceofscifi.com. You can check us out on Twitter, at Slice of Sci-Fi, and join in some of the discussions over on Facebook, facebook.com/sliceofscifi. And give us a little shout-out or a like over on our Google Plus page. If you want to call in a comment, that number is 602-635-6976, or you can record a message yourself and email a link to that message or email that MP3 file to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Please, if you can, donate. It keeps these websites and these shows online. We are experimenting with a few new treats. Hopefully I can get those out by the end of January. And if you or someone you know is interested in contributing news or opinions or reviews to Slice of Sci-Fi, send me an email. Again, summer@sliceofscifi.com. And we'll keep making this a fun and entertaining destination for all geeks. So that's all I've got. And we'll see you with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.